Hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
Gary, alcoholic addict.
Hi, Gary.
Grateful to be here today and sober by the grace of God and the fellowship of CAAA and anything that helps me today.
Amen.
No war stories, pretty much the truth. Grew up in Milwaukee. Parents were a loving family, and my dad drank when I was a kid, and I remember that. He was in a rock and roll band in Milwaukee, and always had people over with the band and everything. And I always remembered as a kid being like 4 or 5 years old, always sneaking, dad's beer, or when he was cutting the grass, I'd be drinking red, white, and blue, and my mom wasn't a drinker, but things happened in the marriage, and due to my dad's drinking, being in a band, things happened, and it was time to get a divorce. At that time, I was like 6, going on 7, and something changed in me. I turned into a hyper kid, didn't listen. I became a biter. I bit my grandpa in the leg so bad, he had a scar for years, And I don't know what happened, but something in my childhood with the dad not being around, in my life like he was. There were some behavioral changes as a youngster. Didn't really do good in school, when I got older I had to do special classes and stuff, and never really stuck to anything. Moved from Milwaukee to the suburbs of Greenfield at the time, and met new friends at 8, 9 years old, and got into some mischief, experienced, the weed, a little alcohol, nothing too hard, nothing too serious, but life was changing, and I wasn't trying to listen to my mom. My dad would say he'd show up on weekends, and I'd be on the front porch waiting and waiting and waiting, And in it, this time my dad opened up a sub shop on 42nd and Capitol and was opening up a tavern on Final Act and Capitol Drive, Sundazzle Pub. And in this time, he was meeting a new family, she had kids, and had no time for me, and I felt really left out, and I acted out on it because of that. When I did go by my dad's, he had the bar, and I experienced a lot. He would pass out, me and the other kids sneak down to the bar, and down in the freezer, and go down by the creek, and steal my dad's weed, and this went on for 20 years, but my childhood wasn't as pleasant. My mom worked hard, she did the best she could, and I had a lot of resentments towards my dad for many, many years because of this. And so throughout the years, through high school and stuff, my drinking progressed into a fatal malady. I became my dad, I made it through high school. I don't know how. I got expelled a couple times. I got into fights with people, with the principal, you know, and it was because I was using, you know, I was starting to use different types of drugs at a young age. And got through high school and I became a daily drinker. Couldn't keep a job, relationship, nothing. Nothing happened, you know, for me. Just was one big party. I became a daily drinker and my life sucked. It was fun for a little while. I crossed that line into alcoholism when I was 20, 21, 22, right in there where it was full blown drunk drivings. Got three of them within a 5-year period. Blackout, pissing on myself, you know, at a party, you know, I'm black, think I'm in the bathroom. I'm actually in, you know, the living room, you know, pissing in on the carpet, you know, just crazy shit. That was fun though, right? I got introduced to cocaine in 91, 92, and it was different. It seemed to be cool. You know, everybody was doing it, going out to the clubs, dancing and snorting, you know. All my friends did it. We drove nice cars and, you know, this is what we did. got worse and worse. Kept using more. Couldn't keep a job. Lost my cars, lost this, lost that. Went to jail a few times through this early time. When I used or drank, I became a different person. When the money ran out, you know, it was time to steal, you know, get whatever I wanted. And that became a habit, you know, that later down throughout the years this is what I would do, you know, I would steal. Got introduced to smoking and my life changed. It never went back to how it was. And I was addicted right away. And not long after that, prison became a part of my life. You know, when I used and drank, I did stupid shit. I didn't care. I didn't care who it was, family, friends, stranger. I won't get caught. You know, I wanted to do what I wanted to do at that time. Went to jail in 1993 for a felony burglary. And I thought I had it under control. I thought my life was okay. I blamed everybody else around me. It's my friend, you know, he made me do it. He put me up to it, you know. I wouldn't figure it out until a lot of years later when I would do more prison time for the same bullcrap. So, you know, I got introduced to Cocaine Anonymous in 1995. And I had a good sponsor, and I met a lot of good people that are still in the program today. But I didn't stay. I didn't have a problem, you know. I did really have a problem, but I wasn't ready to quit. I'd work steps one, go use two, three, you know. Relapse was a part of my life. It doesn't have to be for everybody. But I just wasn't ready, and continued using and using and using. 1998 came around, and blackout drunk, you know, I committed another crime. Got into an altercation with some police officers, and it got to be very serious. And I was facing 23 years in prison. because of my actions. I did get 23 years, actually, but not all prison time. And it wasn't fun. And again, you know, I went to prison, did a few years, had some probation, had some state sentences, had some restitution. During this 4-year prison time, I continued using while I was in prison. I actually did my first AODA treatment at Kettle Moraine Prison in 1998, no, 2000, it was 2000. And, you know, I lied. I made myself this big kahuna on this pedestal, and I was all that, you know, and I was lying. I lied right through it, you know. And I remember, you know, the years later, earlier, you know, the program I was introduced to, and I was thinking of these, you know, and people would write me every once in a while, how you doing? Hope you come back to the program. And I never did for many years later. I did get released from prison in 2001 after serving almost 4 years. And, you know, I had a lot of stuff hanging over me. I had 9-year state sentence, I had probation, I had, you know, it was strict. And I didn't stay clean. I didn't stay clean because I thought I just made some bad choices, some bad mistakes, and it'll be different this time. Well, it wasn't. 14 months of living hell. I got released from the Cheney Center on Fond du Lac. Knowing right what I was going to do, go to my old friends, old hangouts, thugging, stealing, robbing, whatever. And that's what I did. 14 months of living hell got me nowhere. I used every day. I didn't care. The cops were looking for me. My PO was looking for me. I didn't care. I got this time. So I thought, right? 2003 came around, March, and I was in a stolen car. I had an all points bulletin out for my arrest. I did a strong arm robbery with another guy. And led to a high speed chase in a stolen car on the south side. And the guy chasing me was a Milwaukee County Sheriff. You know, things happen for a reason, you know. He was there for a reason. But I did get away for a few days. You know, I was in a different stolen vehicle a couple days later. And my so-called druggie friends, you know, turned me in and said he's in this vehicle, and they got me at gunpoint. And, you know, thoughts were going through my head. I was up for days, didn't give a shit, didn't shower for a week. You know, it was rough. Life sucked. I just wanted to die. I wanted to put the truck in reverse and just gun it and let them cap me, shoot me, and just, you know, it was going on in the newspaper. And I thought of that, you know, but something stopped me. I didn't do it. You know, I surrendered. I surrendered, but I didn't surrender. You know, they took me down hard, and it wasn't pleasant. That was my life. You know, this is all the things that I thought, you know, I had under control growing up, becoming a young man into an adult. I ain't got the problem. You know, I can do this. You know. You know, it was my thinking. My thinking was really messed up. I did get sentenced to prison. I had 9 years hanging over my head from the 1998 case. So that was automatic, 9 years. And I did get sentenced to 3 years in, 5 years out, so a total of 12 years. I think I'm saying a lot.
Must be nervous.
I got sentenced and I laughed in court. I had no remorse, nothing. I laughed. And my family wasn't in the courtroom, but their family was. The victim was in a wheelchair. And I laughed. I couldn't feel at all. I couldn't feel for a couple years later. I got sentenced to prison again for the third time. You know, 12 years. Wow, I got laid down. I got to do 12 freaking years. So I did get sent to max prison. Wasn't fun, but the using continued. There was a way I found it, I paid for it, I got it. I stayed in a fog for 2 years approximately using. And it wasn't fun because when you use, they do random urine tests. Now I'm freaking out, you know, and it became a part of me in there for 2 years. And I got out of there, went to another place, and it was the same. Smoke cigarettes, do this, do that. And a lot of things were happening in my life on the outside. I was in the fence, you know, wasn't pretty, very negative. Wanted to die still, but couldn't do it, you know. I was dying. I was dead on the inside, pretty much. So the miracle comes pretty soon. You know, I had a lot of things going on in my life. My sister was diagnosed with a fatal illness. She was a needle user for many years, and she got diagnosed with this PPH, you know. Her lips turned blue, her hands turned blue, the oxygen, and, you know, and they gave her 4 to 6 years to live, and she lived for 7 years. My mom had congestive heart failure, and she had 25% or less oxygen level, and she was on her way out. And, you know, I was just thinking over my life, you know, the friends I did meet in the program years before, the things I've done to get my ass in prison, you know, thinking it over. At that time, I didn't know when I was going home. I couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I really couldn't. But I knew I didn't like feeling like this anymore. I knew that it was time to make some changes. And for me, change wasn't easy. I could never do anything successfully growing up and becoming a man. I was a failure at life. And March 19th, 2005, I was in my prison cell. I was the emotional wreck. I was an emotional wreck, and I surrendered. And I asked God. I didn't know if there was a God at that time, but I said, God, please help me. I can't do this anymore. And, you know, it's pretty much like that. You know, I remember it like it was yesterday. I never want to forget that feeling. First time in my life, I finally surrendered, you know, to something. And I knew I had some kind of connection with a God of my understanding. And, you know, the miracle started working. I started attending AA meetings, NA meetings in prison every week. When they yelled it over the speaker, I was there. I didn't miss a meeting. And the first year was a living hell. I had stuff, and it was temptations all around me. But I might have picked it up, but I didn't use, you know. I gave it away, I gave it to somebody, I gave it to God. And, you know, life did get better. I actually started the first AA meeting at New Lisbon Correctional Institution because I wanted the program. They didn't have it there. I reached out to Area 75. I reached out to warden, family, friends, and a meeting was started. And the first year, I cried. I cried at every meeting I went to. You know, I had so much guilt. I was very shameful. You know, I did a lot of terrible things to get where I was at. And, but it did get better. I kept doing meetings, read the big book. I had a lot of time on my hands, over and over and over. And I would recite how it works. I would recite the promises and other parts of the big book over and over in my head until I got this. And I was feeling it, you know, in here. And I was feeling it in here for the first time in my life. And that was early on. You know, I was scared to do the steps. But I knew after a year that my life was getting better on the inside. And I did find a temporary sponsor on the outside, which I would call, write to. And I found some guys on the inside that seemed pretty serious, that were going to meetings every week like I was. And, you know, I would talk to after the meetings on the units or outside. You know, we'd have some good talks and talk about our problem. So that's where it all started for me in prison in 2005, the program of hope, faith, and courage, and AA, CA, NA, whatever it is. It was there. I had to do it. I wanted to do it. You know, it's not for people who want it, it's people who want the program in their life. You know, I needed it, I wanted it, and I tried to live it each and every day on the inside. And it was tough. I got sent to another institution where there was more meetings available. They had hot coffee. They had guys from the inside coming in and bring in literature and books and everything else. And I got to be a secretary. I got to be a co-chair. You know, that's what they did there at that meeting. And I got involved. I got involved in prison. And I eventually moved on to work release. And I became a Wisconsin DOC driver, and I drove the state vehicle van from the prison, and I drove that. I did that for 3 years, and I owe it to the program because I wouldn't have been able to do that if I was still playing the game. So I became a driver, and I drove inmates from the prison to work sites and back, you know. And I eventually worked a concrete job, making good money, and drove at the same time. And I did that for, you know, 3 years before I got released. Um, But just before I got that job, I was at prison, and I did my first 16-week residential treatment. And my classmates would look up to me because they knew the program meant a lot to me at the time, you know, and still does today. They knew I had one up on them or something, and they would confide in me and ask me, and, you know, I thought I was working a pretty good program. I did my first four-step with a guy I really liked. He was genuine. Became my friend, even on the outs. And I was able to trust him. But the steps had to become a part of my life, and I worked through step 1, 2, and 3. And I got to 4, and I was fearful. I didn't know. I wanted to do it. I wanted to release that resentment I had towards my dad all these years. I had to forgive myself for the things I've done. But it wasn't easy. And I made it hard on myself, right? Like the big book says, you know, that's the way I ended up doing it. But I searched the little red book, this, that, you know. I made it really hard and complicated, and I didn't have to do that. But I cried through my whole four-step. I wrote 8 or 9 pages back to back. It was full. It was full. And I cried through the whole thing. And I did my fifth step with him, and I worked other steps. And I made a list, and I made some amends. I had to write some. I could verbally do some. And then the spiritual awakening came in prison. You know, I was seeking this higher power of my understanding. And I got baptized in prison. It was a spiritual thing for me. It was a spiritual quest at the time. And I was just seeking something that worked for me. And I did have a spiritual awakening. Part of it was, I think, the surrendering in 2005. It was like a light bulb lit up in the room, and I was able to finally surrender and admit. I knew I had a problem, but I finally accepted it. So I worked through the steps in prison. You know, I continued my meetings. And I did serve 8 years in prison. Not 12, but 8. And when I got to minimum, and I was going to minimum, you know, I was going to meetings in Madison. Four of us would drive to Madison East Side and go to a meeting every week. Or they'd come in, you know, they'd switch it up, and still got involved. The time came when it was time for me to go home. I knew it was coming up soon. My release date, my MR date was 2014, and here I am here today. But because of the program and the things, the changes I did make in my life and staying out of trouble, you know, in DOC, you get in trouble, you get a ticket, and then it goes against you for 1 to 3 to 5 years. You know, I got in fights, and things happened early on that, you know, I had to work through and finally got through and became a better person on the inside as well on the outside. Made some mistakes along the way, but I did have a plan of action when I did get released. The warden at the Thompson Correctional Institution came to me and said, DOC is coming here to see you, and they want to release you early because of the good things you've been doing. And because I was out in the community working, and coming home and laying my bed on a pillow in prison. You know, I was a good inmate, you know. I really was. I had four jobs. I was a driver, snowplow driver, painter, and maintenance guy. And I kept busy. I kept busy with the program. And, you know, they came to me and said, "We want to release you." And this was right before Walker got into office. And there was a lot of changes being made in the DOC. And I had to see a judge through the TV screen, Milwaukee County judge. I was nervous as hell. "He's gonna let me out. Look at my record. I got no chance, even though I'm doing good today." And that's how I felt. It's just no way. I've done too much bad shit in my life. But, you know, he did grant me the early release in April 7th of 2011. And in this time, you know, I was truly blessed. I couldn't believe it. Maybe people really do see a change in this guy, you know? Maybe I am making some changes and some progress. I had to have a plan of action, you know. I knew before this happened that I had to find a home group, a sponsor, get involved, you know, and work this program one day at a time. Early on, it was next week, next month, I started to practice this program early on. One day, I got today, I don't know what's gonna happen tomorrow, I don't know what's gonna happen next week, you know, and weeks turned into months, months turned into years. So I was released finally, you know, and I knew in my heart I wasn't coming back. I'm done with this shit. They laid me down. I did 13 years altogether in prison. I ain't doing no more time for these people. But I gotta stay sober. I gotta stay clean. I gotta make some changes when I get out. You know, cut them old friends off, those old hangouts. You know, they weren't there for me throughout the years. I didn't get money from them. I didn't get letters. But when I did get released, they were trying to get at me. It wasn't happening, you know. So I did 90 meetings in 90 days, sometimes two or three a day. And that was my commitment. I said, "I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it." And that's it. And I did it. I wasn't working when I first got out of prison. I did eventually find a sponsor in AA that has 32 years of sobriety. And I could relate to them. I got a home group, Group 10, Sunday morning, 74th in Greenfield. I do service work through them. I stay involved as much as I can. And this last weekend with the convention, you know, I've really need to do more for CA and myself. And give back and make some changes and better choices. Because in the last year, I've made some bad choices, but I've stayed sober. And, you know, it's not always easy. It's progress, not perfection. You know? So today, you know, I get involved. I speak at Dewey twice a month to the patients. You know, I love giving back. People can relate to my story. I try to talk to guys that have been in my shoes, you know. Most of the guys that I met in prison that got out before me or after me are back in prison. Thank God it's not me. Not today. But they weren't ready, I guess, you know. I've been there. I can relate. So, other than that, you know, I'm grateful you guys asked me to, Jay asked me to speak. This is my second time actually speaking at a meeting besides Dewey. But the program works, it really does. Get to meetings, get a sponsor, work with others. And, you know, the miracles, the promises do come true in your life. By step 9, the promises should come true, what that reading says in AA or other readings in recovery. So I think other than that, you know, keeping sober is the most important thing in my life today. The most important decision I ever made was my decision to give up drinking. I am convinced that my whole life depends on not taking that first drink. Nothing in the world is as important to me than my own sobriety. Everything I have, my whole life, depends on that one thing. Can I afford ever to forget this, even for 1 minute? You know, it's right here still. You know, this program, it's intense in my life. I love it. I love the program. I can't forget how bad it was. I can't forget the high-speed chase made, you know, this recovery happen. You know, all the things, the choices I made to go back to prison for 3 times. You know, I'm really thankful for doing that, because that's how I became sober. That's what I had to go through in my life. It doesn't have to be for everybody, but you know, it's great today. So thanks for having me. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.